Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charter. Although Purdue was better Saturday, the result was the same as the Boilermakers dropped their third close game of the season, a 40-37 decision to Missouri and Ross-Ade Stadium. I'm Kyle Charters, Matt Stevens, and Brian Newbert by in a moment for Gold and Black Radio. In fact, let's bring Matt in right now to talk about that loss. Another close one, Matt. Now three losses for the Boilermakers by a total of 8 points. The last two to come into Ross-Ade Stadium have walked off with victories, Eastern Michigan a couple of weeks ago, and then Missouri on Saturday. Is Purdue closer, do you feel, now after this latest defeat?
I think so. I think that's fair to say. For a lot of different reasons, the first of which is basically, Kyle, that when they're down 27-10 in the first half, you're thinking this can get really ugly really, really fast. And Purdue was able to score 17 straight points and then tie the score. And I thought that showed a lot of number one, just, you know, Jeff Brohm kind of bringing his personality to this football team. And two, they at least found some answers to get some stops from Missouri in order to get 17 consecutive points and then tie the game. So I feel like offensively, they definitely are taking steps forward. I did not think there was a chance that David Blau playing the whole game was going to be able to put up enough points in order to stay competitive with Missouri. And he breaks the school record for passing yards on Saturday night and throws for almost 600. And really, his right arm really kept him in the game, because Jeff Brohm decided when he showed up at the stadium that this was going to be a track meet and we weren't going to be able to stop him. So we got to be able to score points. And so what you have is you leave the stadium now knowing that once Elijah Sindelar gets healthy, you have two quarterbacks who can throw the ball vertically down the field and do it effectively. And so from an offensive standpoint, you kind of have to assume that DJ Knox and Markell Jones are going to be there in the run game when you need it later on in the season. And you have an offensive line, I think, that they trust. So, you know, you can become more balanced. It's just in the course of a 60-minute football game, Jeff Brohm doesn't feel like that can maybe happen. So I do think offensively they found more options. They figured out how to get the ball to Rondale Moore a lot more, like they did in the opener. And so now you're just kind of relying on trying to find some options defensively. And they tried a whole bunch of stuff, Kyle. They really, really did. I've got a film review coming here pretty soon on Golden Black that shows they tried a whole bunch of stuff, and it just none of it seemed to work. And short of getting a turnover by, you know, Kenneth Major at the end there that you thought maybe could produce a Purdue upset win, there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, Purdue stopping Missouri. It was almost Missouri stopping themselves when they wanted to. So from a defensive standpoint, you know, Jeff Brohm kind of said it, they're shaking their head and trying to figure out something that's going to work, because right now they have no idea. From an offensive standpoint, I think they feel like they have a whole bunch of options that can work.
I'm interested to read more of your film breakdown about the defensive things that Purdue tried and sort of where, if any, there was any success. You know, they went with that three-man rush at times. I think fans like to rail against that. I actually think it worked on a couple of occasions, including on the interception, which was almost a two-man rush because the one end sort of dropped into his zone a little bit on that play. But is there any solution here for the defense? They've obviously got to figure out, you know, the one cornerback position. Antonio Blackman really struggled in coverage. You know, a lot of corners are going to do that against that combination of quarterback and receiver. Dedrick Mackey then came in. I thought he was better in coverage, but struggled, you know, in run support and tackling and things of that nature. So, you know, I think there are some complications with which one of those guys you put out there on the field, because, you know, both have areas where they need to improve. What does Purdue do now going forward from a defensive point of view?
Yeah, I don't think the three-man rush did anything other than give Drew Lock a perfect pocket to throw from when he wanted to throw from it. But the interception happened more or less because for about 2 seconds, Drew Lock decided he wanted to take off and run basically a quarterback draw, which would not have gotten him the first down. He realized that before he crossed the line of scrimmage and then threw it completely off his back foot and underthrew the throw. Had nothing to do with the rush, again, that was happening. And so the only thing was that Giovanni Revere did a decent job of holding containment so that Locke couldn't get around the corner. Yeah, I don't think the three-man rush really worked at all. I'm kind of with Purdue fans on that one. After what I saw on film, it kind of gave him the perfect pocket to throw from, unabated. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, I looked at it, and we get the PFF, the Pro Football Focus data, and he was really only pressured on 3 of his 44 dropbacks. That's not going to get it done. What do you do? Well, you hear from Jacob Thieneman after the game, they basically were instructed to keep everything in front of them and limit the damage. Well, your options are to either do that and you know, basically do death by 1,000 paper cuts, or you're basically saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to blitz, and if we give up a 75-yard touchdown, then that's what's going to happen. So from that standpoint, I don't know how Nick Holt's going to decide to pick his poison other than trying to figure out which members of the secondary and which members up front that he can trust. And I don't know what the answers are there. I really don't. It's a really difficult decision for Nick Holt to make in a matter of a week when they have another quality opponent coming to Ross 8 in Boston College.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't know if you can solve the issues there in just a couple of days. They're just going to have to plug some holes wherever they can and hope nothing else springs a leak, I suppose. At this point, Matt, is everyone in consensus, aside from maybe the replay official, that the play should not have been reversed? The touchdown to Jared Sparks, because I just feel like the call on the field should stand. There's not enough evidence there to overturn that call. And I'm not sure ultimately that matters, because I'm not sure that Purdue stops Missouri going the other direction and the Tigers might score a touchdown to retake the lead anyway. We'll never know. But does everybody sort of agree on that, aside from maybe the replay official?
I guess. See, the thing about it is, Kyle, is that I made the argument when I saw it, and I've seen almost every angle now. I'd have been cool with it had they not reversed it, if they'd have called it an incomplete pass. Like, if they'd have called it an incomplete pass on the field and Jared Sparks goes absolutely nuts and says, I caught it, you got to look at it. And then they look at it and they say, hey, look, we can't find anything that definitely says you caught the football. I'd be cool with that, too. But to reverse the call on the field based on the same angles that I'm seeing, I don't see an angle that says, wow, we really got that one wrong. And I don't know if David Blau is making this up. I don't venture to guess that he is, but there were Big Ten, I guess, network officials that told people on the Purdue sideline they shouldn't have reversed it. That really irritated him. It irritated Jared Sparks because, I mean, if there's anybody who has the best angle to know whether or not he caught a football or not, it's probably him. The fact of the matter is that, and I told this to Brian when, you know, I was sitting up next to the box with him. I don't know what a catch is anymore. Like, this is the total mystery box that is the sport of football, no matter at what level. I don't know what a catch is. I don't know what you have to have control of going to the ground. Like, we've redefined what a catch is so many different times in this sport, and I just don't understand it. I grew up a really big baseball fan, and you know when an outfielder makes a catch or not. Like, we don't have to, like, debate what he was doing as he was going to the ground, or if the ball shifted in his glove or what. It doesn't matter. He either caught it or he didn't. And I think we've gone totally to another level of stupid when we try to redefine what a catch is, especially at the NFL level, but now at college. And, you know, to reverse the call on the field, I didn't agree with it. But I also know, and I put this in my final thoughts, which was, that was third and goal. Okay. Purdue had two calls on first and goal and second and goal that were just mystifying to me. And the fact of the matter is that if you're Purdue, and if you're going to win a game like that, you got to get a touchdown on that drive. And the fact that they could only tie it with a field goal really let the air out of the balloon and allowed Missouri to have some momentum to be able to go down the field. I agree that I think that if Purdue had the lead and Missouri was forced to go the whole length of the field, I don't know if they would have been able to do it. I think they would have gotten deep into Purdue territory, but I don't know if they would have punched it in the end zone. And so that may go down as a huge play in Purdue's 2018 season, and it was definitely a huge play on Saturday night.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll never know if Missouri scores there or not if Purdue is in the lead. To me, it's a misuse of replay also because I don't know. Replay to me is supposed to be the look to confirm what the call is on the field or to see if
right.
there's enough evidence. To me, it feels like they're looking to see what they should call there. Like, you know, we're going to call something on the field, and then really what we're going to do is look at the replay and determine what it should be. And to me, that's not what replay is for. Replay is to confirm what was on the field or to see if there's enough evidence that it needs to be overturned. And that's not how it was used in that particular instance.
Yeah, and the other thing shortly, Kyle, that I'll say is that these guys that are on the field, in terms of the officials, they're getting graded by the conference in every game that they do. So did they get it wrong by calling it a catch? I certainly hope they didn't get downgraded because they called that play a catch and they had to have the replay official, you know, overturn it.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem fair to, you know, deny them the ability to get a good Big Ten game later on this, you know, next month because they made a call on the field that seemed like it at the time and even in the process of the review was the right call if that's the angle that you saw. So, and my thought is that also there's a back judge that's sitting right there watching Jared Sparks with I think a better angle than any Big Ten Network camera could have shown the Big Ten Network replay official. I've yet to see an angle that is better than that official that I see in the back corner of the end zone that's literally staring at it. I don't know why it was overturned. But, again, I will point out that if they'd have called it an incomplete pass because of the juggling and because part of the football does look like it is touching the ground, in the midst of Jared Sparks going to the ground for the catch, if they'd have called it an incomplete pass on the field, I would have argued, well, you don't have enough to overturn it and turn it into a touchdown either. So
right.
I would have left whatever the call on the field was, I would have left it be. And so that was where I live on that one.
We'll wrap up this segment with this and then move on to Brian Neubert. David Blau was really good. 572 yards, a program record passing. He had the one underthrown ball on the trick play that he might have been feeling a little bit more pressure. I might have been feeling more pressure than what was actually there, but I don't think you can blame him too bad for that. Otherwise, he was really, really good at a time when you really just didn't expect it from him, and that was a pretty solid performance, to say the least.
Yeah, and even on the trick play, which is, you know, basically a copycat of the play they ran against Ohio last year on the reverse. He underthrew it, but if he even tries to overthrow Bryson Hopkins on that play, it's a touchdown because the play worked about as well as you can have a play work. And if David just tries to even overthrow him, I think he probably connects with him and it's a touchdown. There were throws that David Blau made that quite honestly he hadn't attempted all year. And what you do if you're Jeff Brohm is that you leave the stadium knowing, okay, whether I start Elijah Sindelar or whether I start David Blau, now that becomes totally insignificant because I can throw the ball vertically down the field with either guy. And so, I don't think the great quarterback debate in West Lafayette is over at any point, even though David Blau throws for a school record 572 yards. But I do think that we are now back at the point where there's not a default setting that, well, he can't play because he's not any good. I think Purdue fans are now at a point where, okay, we've got two quarterbacks we feel are pretty good football players and we can probably score some points with both of them. And so there doesn't need to be an audible groan if David Blau and or Elijah Sindelar come into a game on Saturday against Boston College, if Elijah Sindelar is healthy.
there seemed to be kind of an audible groan or an eh if David Blau came into the game or started a game for among this Purdue fan base. I don't think that exists anymore. So I think the confidence
yeah.
level of the guys in the locker room have always been high on David Blau. I just think the coaching staff and the fan base now feel like, you know, number 11 can lead them, you know, at least enough points you would think to win based on if the defense plays at an acceptable level. So it certainly was not David Blau's fault why Purdue did not win the football game. And in fact, my blowout prediction of a Missouri win was, you know, a complete discounting of David Blau being able to do anything close to that on Saturday night. And I think he proved a lot of people that he can still lead an offense and put up points in this Jeff Brom system.
Well, understandable, given that Blau had not done much through the first couple of games, just as I said, unexpected from him on Saturday, but he certainly played very well. All right, Matt, we'll let you
Kyle,
go. We'll bring in Brian Newberger here.
Quickly, Kyle, he had thrown two passes over 10 yards in two games. He threw 25 on Saturday. So that whole thing gets blown out of the water at this point. So David Blau is pretty good at this quarterback thing.
All right, let's take a break. We'll bring in Brian Newbert. We'll do that in just a moment on Golden Black Radio. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chops, salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. The warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill, near the corner of 10th and Main Streets in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
The Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus is your experienced real estate group in Greater Lafayette. If you're looking to buy, sell, upsize, downsize, or anything else, give me a call at 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics.
And Kyle here with Brian Newbert as we welcome him in, talk a little bit to get his perspective on the loss on Saturday. We'll mix in some recruiting here as well. All right, Brian, Purdue loses back-to-back walk-off games, which is a little bit crazy in Ross-Ade Stadium. But it seemed like there were some areas in which Purdue was better, just sort of gut-wrenching to lose in the fashion that they did, especially considering, you know, you thought and many thought that Purdue had taken the lead. In fact, I think many people didn't even think that that play was even reviewable when the officials went to suddenly go review it. But what do you think here? I mean, is Purdue improving? Do you feel a little bit better, I guess, if you were Purdue coming out of that game than you did in the first couple? Or are you just frustrated at this point that you're losing close?
Well, I obviously can't speak for them, but I would think that probably a combination of all those things. I think you have to feel a little bit better about what you did offensively. You look like you're supposed to look, what you aspire to look like under this coaching staff with this personnel. But you make a pretty significant jump forward there, and then you still lose. I think obviously, you know, the offense held up its end of the bargain on Saturday, but the defense, obviously, I think we all kind of expected Purdue to struggle with Missouri. So I don't know if there was any real revelations there, but I think which Missouri kind of batted Purdue around a little bit was, you know, particularly eye opening, and you know, Purdue just didn't have any answers for them. You know, they were able to force the turnover late, which was a big play, gave Purdue a chance. But other than that, Purdue just didn't have any answers for Missouri. And obviously Missouri is a very good offense, but obviously Purdue has a long way to go defensively. That's not new. I mean, we knew coming into the season that they were going to be young, they were going to be raw, they were going to be inexperienced, and they are. It's just the results to this point have been pretty close to the worst-case scenario in terms of how quickly this was going to come along.
The Boilermakers now 0-3 on the season. Did you feel like I forgot where I was going with this? Oh, David Blau's performance. I wanted to talk to you about. You know, we've seen some games from quarterbacks over the years, and you know them put up in Purdue's offenses, which have you know largely allowed for such things. Quarterbacks to put up you know major yardage. Sometimes I think we probably felt like those were you know, sort of hollow yards, maybe a little bit. In this particular instance, I mean, he puts up a ton of yards, but the way in which he did it was pretty impressive, I thought, and made it, even though it was in a loss, one of the more impressive quarterback performances that I think we've seen. You know, Purdue trails, he rallies them back, almost gets the go-ahead touchdown there. Where do you sort of put this in, you know, quarterback performances that you've seen over the years?
Well, it's certainly right up there. I mean, had they won, obviously, it probably would have been a little more enduring in how memorable it will end up being. But I think that, you know, the only asterisk is the ball that hits off the helmet and goes for 74 yards. That's the only asterisk on the performance. The only thing where you say that's just dumb luck. But other than that, you know, a lot of the big passing performances in the modern era here for Purdue have been games where you've been down 30 points and you were getting blown out and you had to throw it to make up ground. This one was one where every play David Blau made mattered. Every single play David Blau made mattered. You're down 27-10, gets you back in the game. You arguably take the lead there at the end. I heard Matt before say that he doesn't know what a catch is anymore. I don't know what conclusive is anymore. I've always thought that if you're going to reverse something, I'm not trying to change topics on you here. I want a ball on the ground with no hands on it. You know what I mean? I just don't know what clusive means anymore. But be that as it may, you know, he totals 4 touchdowns, maybe totaled 5 touchdowns, depending on how you view that play. That would have been a hell of a, you know, almost game-winning drive. It was just a really, really impressive performance under really, really difficult circumstances because he started games before. He's been the man before, so to speak. But for him to do that when he has it all to himself, when he hasn't had that opportunity in, you know, quite some time, was just really an impressive performance.
Brian, we need to take a break here. Stick around for just a second. When we come back on the other side of the break, we'll ask you a little bit about recruiting. We'll do that here in just a moment on Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Bronze Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day, sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights, and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there, too, with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics.
And Kyle here with Brian. We got a couple minutes left. Brian, let's talk just a bit of recruiting as we wrap this one up. Purdue had some visitors in for the football game on Saturday and some pretty high-profile guys as they try to get a couple more commitments for this class while also, of course, holding on to the ones they have. But Isaiah Gibson and David Bell both in town, and I know you haven't yet gotten reaction, I don't believe, maybe you have, from those guys directly. Just good to have them on campus for a big game and that kind of atmosphere. I think the atmosphere certainly was good. It was a good game, but maybe not the outcome that the Boilermakers wanted.
Right, but you're talking about a wide receiver and you're talking about a defensive player. So the wide receiver saw you throwing the ball all over the place, and the defensive player saw just how acute your needs are moving forward. So there's sometimes winning and losing isn't the biggest deal when you have recruits on your campus. It's what they see as part of the process that really matters most. And I'm not saying it was a good thing Purdue lost by any stretch of the imagination. I'm saying it might not have been, in terms of what they saw and how they perceived Purdue because of it, might not have been a total wash. There are arguments there to be made to both, that they saw some things they needed to see in terms of how Purdue wants to be perceived in their eyes. Isaiah Gibson is a guy who wants to play right away, and there are very few schools that can credibly tell a defensive tackle, we're going to play you as a true freshman. Purdue mm-hmm. would be one of those schools.
Yeah. Basketball had a big recruiting weekend, of course, as well, with Malik Hall in town, along with a couple of others. We got about a minute here. Not sure how much there is the more to say about that, other than he was here and he'll have other trips scheduled, including Oklahoma, Oregon, and Michigan State, maybe some, others besides that. But I guess I'll let you have it. But what do you think? I mean, obviously, we knew he was going to be on his trip here at some point, and he made it through the weekend.
Yeah, I'm supposed to talk to him today, not to make fun of my job or anything like that, but he will tell me the visit went well. He will tell me he has three more official visits to take. And he will tell me that he's very comfortable with Purdue, and that's kind of the big thing Purdue wants him to feel, is comfortable. And they want him to, be close to his family, I think. And I think they need to underscore to him, you can come in here right away and you can be an impact player over the course of a 3 or 4 year career, whatever it may be. You can be a star at Purdue, that kind of thing. And all of those things are true because he's that good. Purdue needs to make him believe that, make him feel like he can do that here and doesn't have to go to the biggest, sexiest place he can possibly find to do that.
All right. Well, we will look for the report with him saying those things on the site later on. Hey, thanks, Brian.
Yep, no problem.
All right, that'll do it for the podcast this week. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our sponsors as well. East End Grill, First Source Bank, Charters Team, and RE/MAX Ability Plus, along with Follett's, the 6th Street Dive, and Purdue Federal Credit Union. A pregame for Boston College at 11 o'clock on Friday. Look for Golden Black Radio Express as well throughout the week as news breaks. All right, that'll do it for our show for this week. Thanks to Matt Stevens and Brian Newbert. I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.